From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. If you are following the Republicans' latest effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, you know that block grants are part of the plan. And that plan, which is known as the Graham-Cassidy Bill, would impact California differently than Nevada. Journalist Emily Bazar from Kaiser Health News is back with us. She specializes in insurance issues. She's going to be part of a healthcare conference that's happening in Sacramento tomorrow. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Beth.
Listeners are always happy to have you back, so I'll say from the outset that we're hoping to have you sort through some of this in really simple language. So Lindsey Graham and Rick Santorum are focused on this block grant concept, which a number of other Republicans have embraced. So will you explain the block grant idea that they're proposing?
Sure. This Graham-Cassidy bill, as it's called, would fundamentally change the way that two significant Obamacare provisions or projects are funded. So this would affect, and that means this would significantly affect California, which has been very aggressive, as you know, about adopting the Affordable Care Act and implementing it. So it would affect how the subsidies for people who buy their insurance from Covered California is paid by the federal government. It would also affect funding for Medicaid. In California, our Medicaid program is called Medi-Cal. And I want to make one point about that here. If you're not on Medi-Cal, your listeners are not on Medi-Cal, they know someone who is. In California, 13.5 million people are on Medi-Cal. That's a third of our population. It's a staggering number. And what this bill, this Graham-Cassidy bill would do is it would pay a lump sum, essentially, a block grant. It would give states block grants to pay for their entire Medicaid populations and the subsidies for Covered California and cap the amount that's paid. It's very different from how it's done right now, and it would, in effect, reduce the amount of money we have to provide coverage for those millions of people here in California. And that would change that from 2020 to 2026. And then when you hit 2027 in this bill, it ends. So this is not a repeal and replace bill. This is a repeal bill. It would just drop off a cliff. We would lose billions, billions and billions of dollars every year in federal funding.
Some people might think, well, this gives states a little more control, a little more leverage, which is part of how it's being presented. A state like California already has its own exchange. So without paying attention to detail, you might think on its surface, this is great. This could be great for all states.
That's a very good point. That's how the measure is being touted in Washington, D.C. What it would mean, in effect, though, is that for states like California, like New York, like Illinois, the states that, as I've mentioned, have aggressively adopted and implemented Obamacare, it would kind of move money away from them to states that have not expanded their Medicaid programs, for instance. So it would move money away from California to other states. It would also, as you say, give states the opportunity to make changes in terms of what kind of coverage that is required to be offered to people. And, you know, on the surface, that may sound good. Right now, Obamacare requires that all health plans offer these 10 essential health benefits. They include maternity care. They include mental health care. They include very basic things like prescription drugs, like emergency coverage, like hospital coverage. But this bill would allow states to apply to the federal government and say, well, we don't necessarily want to cover this aspect. We don't necessarily want to cover that aspect. And so even though on its surface, for instance, you would say, well, the bill would still cover people with pre-existing conditions, some of those coverages might be picked away at, and so some things might not be covered. The bill also would allow states to, it would also allow people with pre-existing conditions to end up being charged more for their coverage, which is not the case right now. So, yeah, states could apply for these various things that would affect what kind of coverage people receive in the end, and that may be good. And it may not be good for individuals.
Most of your healthcare journalism focuses on California and the exchange that it's set up. But talk to the extent that you can about Nevada, because as I mentioned, Dean Heller is part of the group that has sponsored this bill. Nevada is in a much different situation with its healthcare program than California is. So for different reasons, this is a very appealing plan for Nevada.
Yes, and I apologize that I'm not an expert on it, Nevada, as I am on California. But to put this in a little bit of perspective, it's not unanimously adored in Nevada. The governor of Nevada, I believe, yesterday, who is a Republican, joined several other governors, a bipartisan group of governors, to write a letter and oppose this measure because they're concerned about especially Medicaid dollars. As I said, they're concerned about the ability to continue to offer coverage to millions and millions of people in their states because this funding would be block granted and in effect capped and reduced.
In fact, I'm looking it up as we're talking about it. And yes, Nevada's governor joined 9 other governors asking the Senate leadership to reject this plan. And in part of a statement that he issued later in the day, Brian Sandoval said, "I know that Senator Dean Heller is working in the best interest of the state, and I appreciate the intended flexibility created in the Graham-Cassidy-Heller amendment, which then would distribute health care funding via block grants." But he said that the framework authored by bipartisan governors is the best pathway to improve the healthcare system. So this is going to divide Republicans, divide governors, but Republicans continue to look for a plan that could pass. They think this might happen. Let's add to this the fact that the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, hasn't weighed in on it yet.
That's absolutely true. The CBO is a nonpartisan agency, and their analyses are incredibly important to these kinds of debates. Unfortunately, the CBO said it will weigh in, but on a limited basis early next week. And it will provide, for instance, information about how this measure may affect the federal deficit. What it won't provide, which is critical, is information about how many millions of people may lose their insurance or become uninsured as a result of this, and how premium amounts may be affected if premiums would go up or down under this measure.
Rand Paul is an important Republican voice in the healthcare discussion. Here's what he had to say about it yesterday.
This keeps the Obamacare spending, keeps well over 90% of the spending and the taxes. And then what it does is it reshuffles the money and it takes it from Democrat states and gives it to Republican states. I think it's going to end up looking, once people look at this bill, like a petty partisan bill that doesn't really fix the problem.
So he's not optimistic about it. He was using, in his words, an effort to explain what you're talking about, how the money is moved around under the block grants. So there's a deadline now to try to do this by September 30th, right?
Yes, exactly. That's the deadline by which they can pass budget reconciliation bills. So they're trying to do this under budget reconciliation, which in simpler terms, it means they can pass it with only 50 votes, which is incredibly important given what's been going on in Washington, D.C. and the infighting going on there. So they have until September 30th, and they need 50 votes on this one.
There could, of course, be a filibuster by Democrats. I didn't see yesterday, did you, where John McCain is on this bill?
I looked it up this morning, and I don't think he has come down one way or the other publicly. I may be wrong on that, but as of this morning, I didn't see anything about him. You know, there was also a bipartisan effort by Senators Alexander and Murray. They wanted to hold hearings to see if they could fix Obamacare. Rather than repealing, they wanted to say, hey, okay, you know, these repeal efforts haven't worked. Let's try to fix Obamacare. Let's try to make changes and work together. Last night, they announced that that was dead.
Mm. So am I technically incorrect if I call this a repeal and replace effort?
I would call it a long-term repeal effort.
Long-term repeal. Yeah. You're listening to journalist Emily Bazar. She covers healthcare policy and issues, mainly in the state of California. She works for Kaiser Health News. So let's shift to the Medicare for All bill that was proposed by Bernie Sanders, by Kamala Harris, and more than a dozen others. Bernie Sanders will be in the state on Friday in San Francisco talking about this. How far is he likely to get with the idea of Medicare for All at this point in time?
It will not pass. Yeah. I mean, I think that's not something I'm saying and as an opinion. It's it will not pass. That's known. And the reason for that, I mean, apart from political will and ideology, let's set that aside. The reason it won't pass is because it would require unimaginable amounts of new funding and probably unimaginable amounts of taxation. I read something last night that said that it would require $32 trillion over 10 years. And so, I think Bernie Sanders, I believe, has suggested, well, there could be taxes on employers, there could be payroll taxes, there could be higher income taxes, there could be corporate taxes. And where's the appetite for doing that, right? I don't think it's there right now.
Then what's the benefit of raising this up and keeping the discussion alive, galvanizing the nurses' union to be part of this bigger dialogue? What's the point in time right now that makes this worthwhile?
Well, I mean, you know, by me saying it's not going to pass right now doesn't mean that there's a huge groundswell right now of effort and interest in these so-called single-payer plans.
That's what I'm getting to, Emily.
Exactly. I mean, absolutely there is. Is there enough to adopt something right now at the federal level? No. No. You can see what's happening with Obamacare. You can't even fix Obamacare right now. And so there's not enough political will. Here in California, as you know, there was an attempt to pass a single-payer bill this year that was separate from, it's not Medicare for All because we don't control Medicare, which is
right.
A federal program. But we, our legislators proposed one, and they tabled it for the year, again, in part because it would have required $200 billion in additional revenue each year. That's more than the annual state budget right now. And that would require, again, more taxes. Where are you going to get that money? But as you say, the nurses union, there are a lot of people who really, really want this. And for instance, there's a group, I can't remember the name of it right now, but they're trying to bring a measure to the ballot to people directly so that you and I and all of your listeners could vote and say, hey, do we want this? So on a state level, I can't make any predictions. On the federal level, it's not going to happen right now.
What I wonder is whether the reality is before its time, but the conversation is important now. I look at housing issues, and there has been a ramp up over the last 2 years in particular, broader over the last decade, to finally get to a point where we have a historic housing package right now. So are we on that ramp to some dramatic changes in healthcare in California, maybe even single payer down the road, that we're just beginning to look at the light of?
Possibly. Possibly. Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned this conference that I'm going to be participating
tomorrow.
In tomorrow. They're going to be, one of the panels is going to be about single payer healthcare. And the panel that I'm moderating is going to be about the Affordable Care Act and the future of the Affordable Care Act and what happens in California. And the question that I'm going to pose to the panelists is, let's talk about two scenarios. What happens if the Affordable Care Act is repealed? What happens if the Affordable Care Act remains? So the single payer question comes up more in California if the ACA is repealed, because then you're saying, oh my God, what do we do? You have millions of people who will lose their health coverage. What do we do to replace it? You know, so all of this goes together. What's going on with the Affordable Care Act and the Obamacare goes together with the fact that the single payer movement is growing, mm-hmm. both in California and nationally.
Mm-hmm. One point I'm not sure that we made clearly is that the mandates would go away under the Graham Cassidy Heller bill. And I think that's important to be very clear about.
You're absolutely right. Right now, Obamacare requires everybody to have health insurance with some few exceptions, and that would go away.
All right. A few more details about the panel tomorrow, which I assume is still open for registration.
Yes, it is. It's I have provided your producers with a link that it will be on your website, I hope.
Okay. It is called Healthcare in Crisis. It is sponsored by Capital Weekly and USC Price School. And there are a variety of workshops and panels, as Emily said, addressing aspects of the healthcare industry and discussion. It starts at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in Sacramento. Anything else to add about where the general appetite, concern, and interest is in healthcare? There was a lot of fear at the beginning, maybe, of the Trump administration that insurance benefits were going to be pulled out from under people. And a lot of those fears have shifted to the immigration arena right now. So as different plans come up in Congress, even with this new one, are people calmer about what the possibilities might be?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think there's fatigue.
Okay.
I definitely think there's
good
fatigue
way to say it.
About, you know, this is like the Lazarus bill, right? It keeps coming back from the dead. There, so people who have fought against this or lobbied against it, I mean, they're tired. But the concerns, I think, essentially remain the same. People are afraid of losing coverage, number one, or people, especially people who have pre-existing conditions, are very concerned that either they will lose coverage or that the coverage will become so expensive that they cannot afford it. And I think that was the most popular thing that Obamacare did, is it required insurance companies to cover you no matter what your health status is.
To what degree are you or are you not surprised by the fact that there is, to this date, no repeal and no replacement?
I was thinking about this last night, Beth. On election night, somebody asked me, you know, well, what does this mean for Obamacare? And I said, Obamacare is gone. I mean, it's gone immediately. And so now, looking back, I mean, I will not make any more predictions. Look at where we are now. Look at how many repeals have been rejected. I would never have imagined that this would be the case right now. I thought Obamacare would be gone. And that's not me saying it because I want Obamacare to be gone. It's me saying it because you have a Republican governor and a Republican Congress, mm-hmm. right? And they have tried so hard for so long to fight the law. But look at where we are now. I'm not making any more predictions.
Well, that category is growing, Emily.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you so much. It's always great to have you in studio. I appreciate it. Good luck with your event tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth.
That is journalist Emily Bazar. We will post links for more information, including to tomorrow's event, at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.